You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. And joining me on the other line, I'm calling from a state where the gyms will be reopened, and he's calling from a state where they will not be reopened. It's Tony East from Indianapolis.
Hey, Adam.
Or Joe. Yeah. I didn't execute that very well. I should have done a better job.
That's okay. You can work on it in a gym, and I can't. So you can
get. So I'm saying that. I mean, I don't know for sure, but in Tennessee, we are aiming like a phased reopening starting Monday. So Memphis might not be, but I'm assuming the gym in Memphis will be open before the one in Indianapolis at this rate. It looks like.
Yeah, well, the reason you, Adam, made this intro for those unaware is Adrian Wojnarowski. I don't have the tweets in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing here.
Oh, I'll read it. I have a tweet.
Well, look at you. Go ahead.
I am ready.
Reporting that.
Yeah, so he said, beginning on May 1, the NBA is allowing teams to open their facilities to players in cities and states where local governments have eased stay-at-home orders. And he mentions Georgia as kind of being the one. Obviously, that's been the big one.
They're already reopening stuff.
Right, already reopening, so Atlanta Hawks can go practice. Good for them. Yeah. But it is working on a way to kind of level the playing field, but it's not going to open in places where they basically are not open. But they're still not going to be like team workouts, just individual workouts and things like that.
Yeah, that's good, I think, for players staying in shape. You know, I know right now that the facilities are technically open for players who have like rehab purposes. That's why you've seen Jeremy Lamb in there and stuff like that.
Should Vic be able to go in there? Because he's rehabbing still.
Vic's in Florida, but yes, he would be able to go.
Ooh, you know what? Florida probably could open up before Indiana anyways.
Yeah. Well, he actually has a gym.
He did. He found a gym.
He has a gym down there. But I'm assuming Brogdon is also probably allowed to go right now. He said he's 100% to video this week. Anyway, irrelevant. But I'm guessing, you know, what they're saying is when the state eases reopening or however they say this, you know, because what they don't want is, like, the Pacers to go to, like, Savannah, Georgia, just so they can go to, like, LA Fitness for practice or anything.
Yeah, could you imagine? What's the Savannah, Georgia, like, college? Like, Georgia State there. That's where Ron Hunter coaches, former Indianapolis guy. But that's not Savannah, I don't think.
South Savannah High School or something.
One of those random. Yeah. Well, remember, the South, they don't have as nice as basketball as Indiana. Right. That's the first thing you learn when you go South, is because they care more about football than basketball.
So, Jared, I think it was Jared Dudley. If I have the wrong player, I'm sorry to Jared Dudley, but I think it was him that was tweeting that, like, he's not super into the idea if they can't get every team in for fairness reasons. I'm not sure.
I'm so worried about the Hawks training right now.
Well, it's not just the Hawks, but yes, I get what you're saying. But I get what he's saying too, where it's like, you know, imagine one team has a 6-week head start on returning to getting in shape or returning to being in the same place, even if they're not allowed to. Like, I remember Sham said right after the league was suspended, like, even at practice facilities for rehabbing players, they can only have like one guy at each basket, you know. So the Pacers practice courts that, at least I'm able to see, that would only be like a maximum if they put all the side hoops down of like 12 guys, so not even the full roster. So like, I don't even know what this would entail, but that's a substantial head start and stuff like that, and your facilities matter a lot. So I don't know. Like, if from a fairness perspective, I'm curious what they would try to do.
I don't know. I'm not that worried about that, I guess. I feel like as long as you can't team practice, these guys are probably figuring a way to play basketball and stuff. It's just a lot of them doing
facility
and workout and whatnot. I mean, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, too, most of these guys don't live in the cities they play in anyways. I mean, they probably are out in Los Angeles right now anyways, in some gym they have created or whatever. I'm more interested in how they actually make this work. Like, do you have, like, one designated person that just cleans down the facility as one player? Do you have, like, a schedule set up?
Or every company's hiring the cleaning people now, but for the virus stuff.
From, like, 12 to 12:30, Vic comes in for his, like, he needs a weight room, and then he has to go to, like,
will be how it goes with a schedule like that.
Right? I mean that's what I'm more interested
in. If I don't know how many states have a team, what, probably, like, 25, 26, but if all 26 of those reopen or get through the reopen stage by like May 10th, May 15th or something, maybe it's fine. But I understand. Yeah, but
here's the problem, Tony. The California teams, which are the two best teams,
never opening. Toronto will never have it too, right?
Yeah. And then Milwaukee, maybe not. I don't really know. I mean, those, and then Boston is another one where probably won't open anytime soon. Those are like the six best teams. Denver's the other one. Denver is reopening a little bit, so maybe
they'll. Maybe if they get to like 20 states and they can still spread everybody out, maybe that would be. I don't know. It's very interesting, but I, regardless of fairness, just poking the devil's advocate hole in this thing, it is nice to know the NBA is looking at a plan back and looking ahead, even though we don't really know when games will be. You know, it still resonates in my head a ton that Pritchard, who A, is informed, and B, it has maybe not influence necessarily within the league office, but, you know, is involved in conversations up there. The fact that he said they're preparing for a regular season and playoffs always resonates in my head as a reason for, even beyond optimism, it just makes me think it has a good chance of happening. So this seems like the first steps to eventually getting to that point. Now, that's not saying it's imminent at all. In fact, it's probably not imminent, but, you know, we're on the track to that happening at some point.
Yeah, and I think you guys remember too, when talking about fairness. I mean, how many players have basketballs in their own house and then you have this weird, like, I don't think you're ever going to be fair, I guess maybe the right way to put it. Like, you're not just because there's a wealth discrepancy among players, right? I mean, there's the ones who make $30 million or $100 million, if they, like in LeBron's case, and there's the ones who make two and don't necessarily have a court and access to all this stuff.
Right.
And put them in a nice apartment, don't get me wrong, but they don't have like all the luxuries of the multi-million-dollar, you know, veteran players. And so, I don't know. I'm not sure you're ever going to find a fair situation. It's you just should just, if things are open, let players work out, because you're better off if players can start working on how to get a better product when it comes to whatever you reopen June, July, right? Because like, if you hold every player out and tell them they can't do anything, then you're going to end up with this weird thing where like the 8 best players in the league will be fine because they'll have their own gyms, or maybe best 25. Maybe I'm being a little generous by saying just 8. The best 25, and then all the middling players won't. And so like, I don't know. I'm, you know, as long as you give teams enough of a like leeway, like, you're not just going to like say, oh, your state reopened June 1, we're playing June 2. Like, as long as you don't do that, I have a feeling these players will ramp up. Cause it's not any different than like a coming into season, right? Like some players choose to be in shape all offseason, some choose not to. I mean, that's
right.
The way the NBA is. I mean, I think, especially with these guys, because of the amount of money they have, if they want to figure out a way to work out, now maybe they won't be in the same kind of shooting shape and whatnot. I get that. But if they want to find a way to stay in physical shape by working out, running, they'll figure it out. I mean, they have enough money to go order weights online and, you know, whatever they need to do to get the workout equipment they need to be able
still
to
still the advantage of team facilities and team doctors. Like,
right, and they probably have team workouts where, like, you can do body weight stuff. I mean, it's not like,
you can't do that at home no matter how much money you have.
Yeah.
But
so
I digress. Fairness or not, I think they're starting to at least plan a path to a return of some kind. I don't know when, but that's the only news, really. There wasn't any – really Pacer stuff besides Brogdon saying he's 100% in a 14-second video this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good sign. We figured that would be that way, right?
We did. Today is going to be Finals Game 6. We finally finished out the Pacers trip through the Finals against the Lakers. It's going to be fun. We can talk about that game and our thoughts on the series. But first, Adam and I, and by Adam and I mean Adam, I want to do a football 5 minutes because there actually was a live sporting event that just happened.
You don't want to talk about how your Minnesota Vikings replaced Stephon Diggs with Justin Jefferson?
Well, that's the only guy whose name I know that they picked it. But he apparently is very good. And the Vikings traded a million picks for future picks. I saw that on Twitter because I follow the Vikings on Twitter. But outside of that, I don't really know what they did.
They took a quarterback, the Iowa quarterback, really late. That doesn't really count.
Seventh round, right?
Should they have taken Jordan Love? This is Kirk Cousins' last season, I believe, in his contract.
No, he got an extension.
Oh, he got an extension? So he's
3 more years now, yeah.
2 more. But is it all guaranteed before?
No NFL contract is ever guaranteed.
No, his was the only ever one fully guaranteed. He was the first
one. Yeah, my impression of NFL contracts is they can, like, move the money around in the years around whenever they want, basically. So
I mean, that's the right impression. But Kirk Cousins was the only player. Kirk Cousins, I think, is one of the most fascinating NFL players because he bet on himself year after year, got franchised like the max amount of times. So he made like $90 million over 3 years, and then he got a guaranteed kind of hit for agency.
Vikings fans are very interesting, the ones I see on Twitter, because it's very interesting to me, like, how strong people defend Kirk Cousins' mediocrity. Like, yeah, he's
very mediocre.
He's fine. He'll get you to 10-6, but like,
people
act like he's like the answer. It's like,
with more interceptions.
Yeah, he's better than Alex Smith. He can throw down a little bit, but it's close. But like, you know, that team, that Chiefs team that Alex Smith got was really good with, right? They had a really good defense, and he had sick weapons. It's like, that's your ceiling with Kirk, and that's fine. That's
but you saw immediately what happens when you put a really good quarterback behind there. All of a sudden, your team goes from being 9-7, 10-6 to 13-3.
But I'm not saying there's a problem with Kirk. I think Kirk is good. It's just like, I am shocked the strongest level of defense for like, yes, we kept Kirk. I'm like, okay. Good will be good. Like, I can enjoy rooting for the good team. It's just hard. Anyway, you can talk about the Colts now.
I mean, I was just going to say, if you're the Vikings, you better be trading for Aaron Rodgers right now and trying your hardest. That's who I'd be trying to get, because that team is ripe to have just one.
That's our thing, man. The dying seasons of Packers legends go to the Vikings.
Yeah, that's what I would do. No, so the Colts. Colts traded their first-round pick, I don't know, about a month ago, maybe a little less. I don't remember the exact day.
I remember that for
DeForest Buckner, a really good defensive end tackle, I believe. I don't remember which one. Whatever he is, he's on the D-line, which was terrible for this team last year. And, you know, they had a lot of things wrong, so let's be real. They weren't good. But they took a wide receiver and running back the first two picks. I guess they're kind of –
took a running back early?
Took a running back, 40th overall.
Isn't that dumb?
Nah,
I mean – strategy-wise, I have no idea who this guy is.
I don't know. It depends, because last year they had trouble.
Is Marlon Mack not on the team anymore?
No, he is. They just you need like three running backs in the NFL, because Mack got hurt for four or five games last year, broke his wrist, I think, at one
point. Oh, I remember that now. He was on my
team. Right, Mack gets hurt every year. Like, they have like five running backs now, but in the NFL, honestly, especially the second round picks, don't make much money. Like, you can't ever have too many running backs.
Is he the best running back?
I don't know if he's the best running back taken. I don't know how that actually honestly went. To be
honest, their line's good, so he'll be good, right?
Yeah. It all depends on the Rivers is any good. That's all that matters, is if Philip Rivers is any good.
I did see a graphic the Colts tweeted of the receiver they picked who had like four drops his entire time in college or something insane.
Yeah, the question I have with him is the Colts have a track history of not doing well at the wide receivers from drafting-wise, right? So they'll last like three months taking Moncrief, Philip Dorsett, and Paris Campbell of all. I mean, Campbell is still – the jury's out on him, but the other two kind of flamed out. So I don't really buy
into what – tall? I know that's a thing.
I don't really buy any wide receiver hypes until I see them, because you know they're all like every wide receiver drafted is like a 4.4 freak who can jump 60 feet in the air every time. I mean, they're all.
My thoughts on drafting receivers is the most hyped I've ever been for a Vikings draft pick. Probably this decade was Laquan Treadwell, and he was terrible.
No, he was terrible. Like T.Y. Hilton was the 120th pick or something like that, and he's been the best Colts wide receiver since Reggie Wayne.
Yeah.
And like, nobody thought he was going to be that good, but he, like, has an unreal speed, and he gets healthy. He's really good catching in traffic. There's just things he does that are really effective compared to other guys. So I don't really bind wide receiver.
What grade would you give the Colts draft?
I don't know. I mean, that's what I mean.
NFL draft is so hard for me to understand.
No, it's impossible to understand.
I just don't get it. Like, I watch only the college football I watch is occasionally IU football and the playoffs, right? So in my head, the second best QB I saw in college football is Jalen Hurts, and that dude didn't get picked for forever. And then the team that picked him is going to put him over a former IU quarterback, so I'm pissed.
Oh, it'll be okay. Stuff was not that good. No, I mean, the thing with the NFL draft, you have to look at it, is really outside the top five and maybe even the top three, they're just lottery tickets, right? So, like, more picks you have in round one, you know, like first-round picks hit 50-50, let's say. Like, they're starters and play for three or four seasons, right?
Are they cheaper, like the NBA?
Oh, they're super cheap. I mean, so, like
– that's why, like, I saw the Niners traded the pick for Buck – or they traded Buckner for the pick and then picked the guy who plays the same position. So, is that just, like, a cost thing?
Yeah, so like Tua this year will make $30 million over 4 years. So that's $7.5 million, right? I think their stock cap's $210 million, right? The best quarterback in the league makes 37, I think it's what Russell Wilson. So like the key right now with a lot of these first round picks, you hit them early enough to get on these cheap rookie deals, right? Unlike the NBA, NFL rookies can really be good by their second year. I mean, you're seeing Mahomes, right? Mahomes is a third-year player this year.
Mahomes was good his first year, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, second year because he didn't play his first year. But, like Carson Wentz was really good by second. Like, if you hit on these – like, these guys can develop so quickly because the league turns out guys so fast. When the NBA, even if you hit on the best of rookie by their third year, you really are not going to win a championship. Unless it's LeBron or – really, LeBron's the only I can think of right now.
Like Zion, basically.
Yeah, right. But, like, LeBron – I think LeBron made the finals before his second contract, but it might not have been that – no, I don't think
he made it. No, he didn't.
So – the NBA, you're like hoping that they're good by their second contract. And the NFL, honestly, like you're hoping like your guy's good the first 4 years. And honestly, you could think about getting rid of him even if he's like not, you know, unless he's like otherworldly, right? So like that's the whole goal is to hit on these lottery tickets. Like first round 50-50, second round 30-70, and it keeps getting, you know, lower odds. But
I have one more NFL draft question.
On three, you're good in each draft.
Seven rounds is a ton of rounds. So like do a lot of these guys not even make the team?
Yeah, the 6-7 round picks don't always make the team.
Okay.
But remember, the 53 guys on a roster, not 12.
Yeah.
I think they're 15, right?
I also know the Colts picked a quarterback, which is cool. I don't know anything about the guy, but
yeah, I don't know much
quarterbacks
about
get every story, so cool.
I mean, like I said, again, it's like lottery picks. The more you go back to farther rounds, like the lower odds are. And quarterback especially, like are overvalued. So like fourth round quarterback really is probably a seventh round value player, but the quarterbacks, because they're, you hit on a quarterback, it's like gold pretty much. Like if Eason became like a bub starting on quarterback, making, I think he's going to make like $1 million maybe a year for his 4 years. Like that's like the most bargain deal in the history of the league.
Yeah.
Outside of, like Russell Wilson was that way. Right? Wilson by his second year made Super Bowl, third year, and he was making like $800,000 a year. So that's why he's getting paid now, because it's getting paid on the back end. But
yeah,
that's that kind of means.
Well, all I know is the Vikings got more for Diggs than DeAndre Hopkins and then drafted a receiver who's apparently sick. That is my
Hopkins is like three draft. Times better than Diggs. Hopkins is the best receiver in the league by far.
Too. He is the best receiver in the league. I thought he was close, yeah.
I think he is. I mean, that's just my opinion. Him or you go Julio Jones maybe, or you know, but one of those two are the best two in the league. They're really good.
Dang. Well, hopefully this LSU kid can bring the Vikings to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think we talked enough football. Let's take
a quick break. We have talked enough football. Let's get back to the Pacers.
Let's do a break, and then let's do the 2000 NBA Finals, final game, game six.
Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Postmates. Are you someone who starts thinking about dinner while you're eating lunch? Well, then you'll love Postmates, the food delivery from every restaurant right to your door. Especially nowadays, using Postmates is the perfect way to get all the places that deliver food right to your place. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi and food. They actually make life easier with grocery delivering and whatever you can think of they deliver as well. From convenience stores, drug stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even think you have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore, because Postmates is the place to go. Just download the Postmates app for iOS or Android and find your favorites of anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is offering Locked On Pacers listeners $100 of free delivery credit for their first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's the code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 free dollars delivery with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmates it.
All right, Tony. So, the last NBA Finals game the Pacers ever played in, right?
Yes, indeed.
Where do you want to start in it, I guess? Should we just start from the beginning? So what's the caveat here? We're going to do kind of this game, and we're going to do a whole series talk at the end of this whole thing.
Yes.
Where do you want to start in this game?
I want to start by saying, is there a more Pacers thing ever than just getting dominated on the offensive glass for the first 10 minutes of the game? And that is the only thing that prevented them from being up probably 10 at the end of the first quarter.
I would say there's nothing more Pacers than leading after three quarters in the clutch game and then blowing it in the fourth, and not even the year in the game by the time the game ended.
The Lakers were down 11-9 at the first TV break. I have this in my notes. I hope that's right, but I don't write down things I don't see. They were up 11-9 at the TV break, and 7 of the Lakers' 9 points had come off of offensive rebounds. They only finished the game with 13. That's not like that's bad, but that's not like, oh no, you totally blew it bad, but I mean, they could have been up 11-2 early, and like Jalen hit his first three, he's feeling it. Reggie hit the runner, his first shot, he's feeling it, right? Like they scored 111, they played pretty well on offense. Imagine if they just like punch him in the mouth right away. And Larry Bird, the NBC broadcast, talked about how before this game, he said whoever wins this game is going to the finals. Like he was that confident. If the Pacers win this game, they win game 7. Like,
I don't know about that one.
But I can only quote the legend, but I agree. Anyway, I agree with you, not him. But you know, if you punch them in the mouth early, maybe they shut down and just know they have another game in their back pocket. But to give up, you know, AC Green just swooping in and getting two of them early, or who was the other one? Kobe got two of them actually swooping in early. Like that changes the whole game a ton.
Yeah. To me, though,
when you sigh, you're about to say something either very profound or that I totally disagree with every time.
So you talk about hitting them in the mouth at the beginning of the game, but like again, to me that's not where this game mattered, where it came down to it, I guess, right? I mean, I think the way these games flow, right? So if they hit the mouth early, Lakers come back, like it ebbs and flows, right? I think the critical junction here, is like third quarter, early fourth, end of second quarter, like is it closing of the quarter, pretty much the second or third quarter where it really sort of changes for me, I guess.
Yeah, the end of the second was yuck. Sure. They were up like 10, weren't they, right before? Then they ended up only being up 3.
I have the play-by-play.
They were up 10 with under 3 minutes to go after Rose scored. And then Glenn Rice, too. They immediately foul Kobe. Shaq gets free throws. Shaq dunks Kobe three that whole time. They only get a Crozier three.
So right. I mean, they could have gone into the half up like double digits or even maybe up more if they didn't blow that, like kind of push that. And that would have been like, not that it would have been the death knell, but like there's something about like, then they need to hit, like then the Lakers hit them really bad in the first, beginning of the third quarter. There's a real shot they win this game, kind of run away with it. And maybe the Lakers just kind of give in and say, let's go to game seven anyways.
No, and the killer part too is like, okay, you're up 10 with 2:56 to go. Then they score four and you hit a three. So it's still, you're up 58-46 with a minute to go. Like, you just missed shots. It wasn't, like, so bad for that 2 minutes. Then there was that Mark Jackson turnover and the Austin Crozier turnover back-to-back. That is what killed you, because then when Shaq hit the free throw right before that, all of a sudden you just gave up a 7-0 run in, like, 40 seconds right before halftime. And I know we just talked about football, but, like, I know a lot of football commentators talk about the last 5 minutes of the second quarter and the first 5 minutes of the third quarter being super important, right? Like, that's what this was. Cool. You know, it's another punch him in the mouth kind of thing where you have all the momentum at halftime versus giving it away.
So, like, to me, and this is why the first quarter didn't matter to me, is, like, when I watch NBA, I don't think the first – let's take the first 18 minutes. Usually, you end up at that –
unless
that
you're up, like, 20.
Yeah, but usually at that juncture, usually you get to pick, you end up at like a 5-point game most times at that 6-minute mark. Really, no matter what, a lot of, like most games, right? The average game, just because one team comes out hot, then they cool off, the bench comes in, brings them out, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, how big can you watch where they go down 11 the first 6 minutes and they come back and it's tied by the time the bench unit leaves the court in the second quarter? And that was a big, right? That's just kind of a lot of NBA games happen that way. So to me, the critical junctures always are the end of second and the third, right? So they're either when you can, you're down a bunch, you can come back, right? Or they're where you extend late, your lead or you extend your lead to 20 points mid third quarter, and then the other team has to decide: do we want to put all the effort in to come back, or do we want to just give in and go to the next night?
I don't have anything. I do have stuff in my notes about late second quarter. I don't have anything about late third. I have to look at the play by play.
Oh, I'm not talking late third, early third, late second to early.
Early third wasn't. It was all right.
It was fine, but I mean, in a game in general, those are the two junctures where like they can make a huge difference. And then if you're
right.
A tight game, then it's just back and forth fourth quarter. I mean, that's how that goes, but that's all I mean is that if they go up 10 in the half and they come out the third quarter and smack them in the face like they should, you know, they do go up 15 or 20 if they did 15 or 20, that's ball game for this game. Lakers probably just say screw it, right. we'll go win game seven, and then who knows in game seven what happens. I mean, it's a game seven.
So from that under 3 minute mark, right, the Lakers had 43. They scored 73 the rest of the game. So basically, at 3 minutes to second half, they scored 73. Like, the Pacers defense really crumbled at that point onward. So that's another tip in your cap that is like a super important moment in the game where the Pacers just ran out of gas on the defensive end because
– Well, Shaq turned on a little bit second half.
Shaq did have a really nasty second half. And there's only so much you – like, we talked about him every game except really game five because that was his best game.
His quarter four – I mean, it's about quarter four in a few minutes, but his quarter four was also just like, this is why he's the best player.
20 points in the second half. Yeah, what do you have? Only like he had like 13 or 15 in the fourth.
He had a perfect fourth quarter.
Wow. Man,
he missed free throws. He missed free throws, but perfect.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
I mean, he misses every time.
Like first possession, they just immediately throw it into him like they're trying to bait Smits into fouls, obviously. But, I mean – we talked about it all series except for last game, so it feels like it's been a while because it's been 2 weeks. But it's just when he is the focal point of their team or he just is saying, like, F it. Like, there's just nothing they could do. And that's what happens in the second half. And really not even that much late in the second quarter, although he did have 15 that quarter. But late in the quarter, they started to go to other guys to finally hit the shots because he was the only guy hitting up to that point in that quarter.
Yeah, I mean, you got to talk about big shot Rob. Robert Horry. Again, eight fourth quarter points came out of the start.
It's absolutely ridiculous how many titles Robert Horry.
Yes, seven, right? Three with the Bulls, three with the Lakers, and one with the Spurs. With the
Spurs. Yeah, seven time right. NBA champ.
He has more champs than Michael Jordan. That's how crazy
that's this. Ridiculous. Seven time NBA champ. His highest ever points per game is 12 on the Houston Rockets in 1996. He went to the finals with the Rockets too, didn't he? I didn't even know.
That sounds right. I think
they lost the finals the year the Bulls.
He has won, so here's his bio on Wikipedia. He has the most championships outside of any player to have not played on the 1960s Boston Celtics.
That's insane.
Like
he has a good role. Like this series, like I knew he was a good role player.
I'm sorry, his nickname was Big Shot Bob. I didn't realize that. That was Big Shot.
He's useful. Like I clearly get why he was part of all these championship teams. He can shoot the three ball. which not like in retrospect, if you just like stared at his basketball reference percentages, which is why I'm saying this, they don't look awesome, but in this era, it was awesome. And in these finals, he shot pretty well. And
so we were wrong. He did not play for the Bulls. He played for the Rockets.
No, he played for the Rockets, Lakers, Spurs. In order.
I was thinking he played for the Bulls. I don't know why I thought that. He did. Did he? He played for those Phoenix Suns teams in the late.
So he might have had the championship the year the Rockets did win it.
Yeah. He has two Rockets, three Lakers, two Spurs.
Yes.
Two Spurs.
The years Jordan went away allowed him to. So he won when Jordan was gone. Then Jordan won him again, and then he won again when Jordan left again.
Yeah, but there's a good case that one the Rockets teams were as good as the Bulls.
They were really good.
That was like he just avoided them.
Dream was ridiculous, but like. Like, Ori was playing 38 minutes a game on the second Rockets championship team. Like 37 minutes a game on the third of the Lakers three-peat. Like, he didn't play a ton of minutes in this particular series, but Robert Ori, very important player, played the entire second quarter of this game, is why I was about to talk about him, and played 10:30 of the fourth quarter. So, yeah, Ori was in there a lot, and I remember, I think it was game three, they were talking about Glenn Rice and how he was mad he wasn't playing a bunch in the fourth quarter, but Phil Jackson was like, dude, you're not playing any defense, and Ori and Fox are doing a lot better than you. So he kept going to them in the fourth, and it worked. But that was a lot of words that did not say what I should be saying, which is Shaq was just ridiculous in the two quarters that you have talked about.
Yeah, and that fourth quarter, it can't be said enough about the Jalen and Reggie combination of like 2 for 15.
Clunkers. 2 for what, 10?
2 for 11. I exaggerated. 2 for 11. 0 for 3 from 3 from Reggie.
They Rose was actually okay, right? He was getting to the line a lot.
Yeah.
Which was good. He was pretty good this whole game. Like, he hit his first shot, and they, like, panned the camera to him, and you could see him, like, blow and exhale, like, of nerves. And, you know, it's just like he was – you know, I think once you hit that, you know you're going to have a good game. He had 29.
You would think he was prepared for the moment. Remember, he had those two big NCAA tournament runs with Michigan. Like, he's been in big moments. Not like it's, you know, he was on the – super famous Fab Five teams, obviously.
Yeah, and the rest of the team was, like, okay in the fourth. And one of my takeaways is going to be about this guy. But Crozier, you know, fighting like hell the whole quarter. They didn't have to play Rick that much because they have Crozier battling.
Rick sucked anyways.
Rick was not good in this game. But Dale Davis was exceptional in this game, on the other hand. But, if Reggie hits one more shot, everyone shot well but Jalen that quarter. It's just really rough for him besides getting to the line. And, you know, that was pretty killer at clutch time, you know. Kobe did not also had a similar quarter to Jalen where he couldn't hit anything, but you know, they could not match Shaq's production. They needed one of those guys to step up, and they couldn't do it.
I'll talk about the crazy part of the series because we're gonna do a whole recap on that. You want to do some weird commercials real fast?
Oh, I didn't get a commercial broadcast.
So I found one. I was just kind of messing around. So one, they had a really crazy Game 7 if necessary commercial. I'm just gonna watch it again. It was like this, like lightning strikes, Pacers are like in the cornfields. Like, it was just like this crazy, you had like Larry Bird like screaming in it. And it was just like this crazy, like Game 7, if necessary, Wednesday, I think is when it said on it. Then you immediately go to Steve Young is going to be on the Tonight Show.
Okay.
It was just NBC, I think. And then you go to a Friendly's commercial, which, then you go to a Chrysler, and my mom had this car, the Chrysler minivan, whatever it was called.
Nice.
Real.
Are you an only child?
No, I have two siblings. I have two sisters. They're much older than me.
Oh, they're okay. I was going to say, why'd your family have a minivan?
Oh yeah. We had
relevant had Chrysler, topics. Pacers Lakers is the Friedman family minivan. So,
yeah. So, but I would say the best of the three to me was, the Friendly's commercial. Cause it was just
I watched all six games and did not find a single commercial filled broadcast.
Oh my God, what are you doing? This is like
I made sure to I like watching the intros because they always talked about like what the players and coaches were saying the day before and like leading up to the game because you know it's stuff that matters for the games. But I never found commercials. That sucks. That's funny. I mean,
you gotta wonder why Steve Young is on the Tonight Show in 2000, right? He's still a good quarterback that year. I can look it up real fast.
Wasn't he good every year he played? Oh, this specific year, I see.
Yeah, like I remember he won in 95, but 2000, I thought he was like basically done. No,
let's get to the fourth quarter here. We've danced around long enough, I feel like.
Yeah.
So the last time the Pacers were leading was 90-89 with 9 minutes and 2 seconds to go. And from then on, they just couldn't keep up. Shaq was killing it.
Big shot Rob.
Thing. They couldn't make shots. Big shot Rob hit 2 threes this quarter.
Yeah, he hit one at the 7-minute mark.
They tie it up at 103, and then just,
which is the most Pacer moment ever, to hit a fourth quarter lead, then come storming back to tie it, but then still find a way to lose. I mean, that describes like five different Pacer teams in a big moment. Like
they got it to, and then late, like they actually didn't totally suck from the battle, like after it was tied, because right away Reggie had a turnover and they were down, I think, five. They got back in it because of Crozier and Dale Davis, and they got it to one with like a minute left, but then they just did not figure – like Crozier shooting with 58 seconds left, that shot shouldn't happen. Reggie takes a good three, 30 seconds left to tie it, misses it, and that's it right there. Like they just had no answers at that point. They had to foul, but they didn't get the look they wanted on that shot with a minute to go when they were down three.
Yeah, Reggie missing one of these shots late didn't help.
No, Reggie missed a lot of shots in that fourth quarter. But, yeah, it was very interesting, you know, just like when we went down the end of the overtime to see what shots they tried to get, you know, and who they went to in key moments, because I don't think they wanted the 11-footer. You know, so the possession is they go to the left wing for Reggie, dump it into the post to Crozier. There's still time on the shot clock, but everybody's kind of standing around, and it's an intentional post-up. They called it for him. So I was really surprised to see that he airballed it with that much time on the clock. Shaq gets the rebound. So that was the possession that I just really do not understand in retrospect, as much as I liked Crozier in this series. But, it was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's crazy about the end of this game is they got the stop on Kobe. They just couldn't clean the glass up, ultimately.
Shocking.
Again.
Offensive rebounds and key moments. Yeah, if we do the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals for one of these games going forward, we're going to be screaming.
So, again, missing bigger, does that not remind you of like 30 Pacer teams?
I know, exactly.
I can think of at least five that have screwed up.
See, like, even though Sabonis has his limitations, the dude is beloved by Pacers people because he actually goes up and gets the damn offensive rebound.
Yeah, better than anybody. I'm trying to get to the Reggie 30-second shot left.
Yeah, so of the Lakers' offensive rebounds, 8 of the 13 came in the first quarter or fourth quarter, which I thought were two key stretches.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Crozier shot just stinks to me. The Reggie three is what it is, right? You're down three. You might as well let your best shooter go for that.
Yeah, I just felt like that was a rush three, I guess, but that maybe
it was.
I don't know.
It totally was. And then Kobe cooked him on the other. It's just brutal.
Yeah. Right, because Kobe beats him. That's why there's a double team. Like, at least tried to get open with the dunk, right?
Well, Kobe actually missed. Yeah, Kobe missed.
Kobe missed it, but the guy had a pull over off.
In transition, Reggie. Mark Jackson to Reggie, and yeah, he just yanks it. They had so much time. Like, now I just dunked on him. Crozier's wide open, like scooting into the corner.
Well, no, but like he had plenty. Like, I think he was thinking 2-for-1, right? That was the whole. It looked like that's what he was thinking.
That's true. There's
but it's like 2-for-1. Go to the rim and just get a 2-point shot. So that way, if you stop me, you have a chance to just.
See, this is sort of like the Travis Best shot from earlier in the series, where like we totally get why he took it because glory, but you should.
I don't get why. Yeah.
Well, with Reggie, it's different because you're not Travis Best; you're the best player on the team.
Yeah, but Reggie is
over. Go ahead, but that shot was not good.
Reggie made one shot this whole quarter, and it was like a pump fake three into a two. That was the only shot he missed whole quarter. So I don't know why he thought he
was. Yeah, his floater game was working there. Reggie had a horrible game.
And Reggie, he missed a three in game four, right? That was the big one he missed there.
He missed that three, yes.
So I don't know.
And he should have had a three to win it at the end of that game as well. Yes. Yeah, he never had like a signature shot this series, which sucks because that would have really helped
him. Well, that's what he needed. If he had come up clutch in this series, they would have won the series probably. Yeah. He had hit a couple of big shots. I mean, that's kind of the difference between him and Kobe.
The next few times, he almost beat MJ by coming up clutch. We'll talk about that Last Dance stuff if that ever happened.
It's kind of the difference between him and Kobe, to be honest. Yeah, right? If he does this, he might
be. Kobe had nasty clutch games this series.
Yeah. Well, really had one, I'd say. Maybe two, I guess. This one wasn't that good. He wasn't that clutching, really.
But. Yeah. So overall, let's zoom out, Adam.
Yeah, well, let's take a break and then let's do overall.
Okay.
All right. So I had a thought on the overall. So the thing about this series that I found the craziest was how peak Jalen Roses was, and the fact that he would never be this good again is kind of crazy. No?
Was this his peak?
I mean, he had a good year. Okay. The next year, but like he was like legitimately like you leave this series, he was we talked about this earlier one time, but like he's 27 or 28 years old. You leave this series thinking that he's gonna be like, you know, the next 3 or 4 years just this killer player. And really by about 2002, he gets traded 2001, 2002, and then he's out of the league. But I mean, he's just like
he was really good for the Bulls, but after leaving the Bulls, he was never anything, which was only like 3 or 4 years later.
But like,
I guess you could say this was his peak, like seven games. I see what you're saying.
And I just mean, like, this was the moment where, like, oh, this guy's going to be a Pacer and him and Reggie are going to dominate the next couple of years and they completely just rebuild on – I mean, it was smart rebuilding on the fly, but yeah.
Yeah, Watt. When Watt Jonathan Washburn talked about Rosen on the show, his take's always been, and I've heard him say it before we watched this, this is why I wanted to have him on, was like, Rose was the best player on this finals team. And it was probably wasn't over the course of the whole season, but in the series, I definitely agree with him that he was. So if what you're saying is Rose's peak of his career was like this series, yeah, I can get on board with that. He was really good in the series, and there was a lot of times where he was substantially the best creator on the team, right? Like Jackson, like, could run the plays and get like Darren Collison-esque assists a little better than that. But really, Rose was the big initiator in setup, man.
I mean, he averaged in this whole playoffs, he averaged 20.8 points on 44-43 shooting. I mean, I know that's not great.
He was number special. From field
goal, but still pretty good.
He was better than Reggie. I think that I can say for sure. Not that Reggie was like bad, I guess, in the series, although he definitely wasn't good.
I guess I mean, like, you leave a series with 20, he's 27 years old, and then he, like,
and he just won most improved, right?
Yeah, right. I think so. That sounds right to me. And you think he's going to become like an all-star the next couple of years, and he's good. I mean,
he was close as hell with the
ball. Hard to read his B-ball rep page because there's so many trades, and like you got to pull like the right season. But like, so right after this season, he comes back, plays 83 games, which is the most ever players played because he got the weird trade. Averaged 20 points. Next year, averaged 22 points per game. But the Bulls are not very good, right? They're the rebuilding post-MJ Bulls. Then he gets traded out to Toronto, where he plays a lot of games, puts up numbers, but he's not really that good anymore. And then he's out of the league by, you know, 0-7 at 34.
Well, Reggie, this is so bizarre to me. This is blowing my mind. Like, I just called Rose better. I think he was better from watching the games. Reggie averaged 24.3 points on 41-37.5-98 splits, right? So really, it was like the two pointers, and then game six, Reggie's three was gone. But it was really the two pointers that Reggie just could not get to go, and game one just sunk him in my brain. Like, he was terrible in game one. And it was, in every game, I was like, oh, Reggie was good. This is finally, like, I didn't need to clarify. He was good in five of the six games. He was just really bad in the game one. And not that Reggie's LeBron level, but, like, this reminds me of that Mavs series where LeBron had that game in Dallas where he had, like, 9 points or 8 points or something.
Yeah, where he just,
and, yeah, and, you know, if you like, lump his whole averages of the series together, he had, like, 19 points a game on whatever, something junk percent shooting. But if you remove that one game, he was really good in that series. And it should be used against him because he was terrible for the one game, but it's misleading. I think Reggie's a similar thing, and it's just now clicking in my head looking through this that he was good in the five of the six games. It's just the one, he was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's – like we said, it's certain moments where he doesn't come up big, and then he just was – he was just like
– like, if he has the exact same series but, like, hits a – three to tie it at the end of one of the games and they still lose it or something, like,
if they win so game much four, they this series goes seven probably, right?
Yeah.
I'm not probably gonna win in seven. I mean, this is the Lakers at home. I mean, if they had come back from 3-1-1, that would be like, that would be the jokes that were so big during 2015-16, right? That 3-1 comeback. I mean,
yeah,
there's a reason nobody had done it until LeBron did it, basically.
And it's hard.
And it took a lot of luck, injury luck and suspension luck, to pull that shit off.
It took a kick to the nuts.
Yeah, and it still almost didn't happen.
A swift kick to the nuts.
If Steph shoots the ball instead of passing to Iguodala, you know, a couple of them go the other way, it doesn't happen. Anyways, no, I mean, I think the thing with this series is that it just kind of highlighted, oh, it's right, Reggie Miller was always kind of like the next tier of player.
Tier B, yeah.
Yeah, but what's great about the series is, like, I don't think, like, Shaq was, like, super clutch. Kobe kind of was, right? But, like,
well,
Shaq was just so dominating that, like, it didn't matter. Like,
this up a few weeks ago. Because remember when we talked about Kobe right after his death, we mentioned that he killed the Pacers in the 2000 series, and some people said on Twitter, no, Shaq killed them. Well, yeah, okay, we just watched every game. Yes, Shaq killed them all the time. He was the best player in the series, no doubt. I am not conceding that. You people on Twitter were absolutely right. But yeah, like you just said, Kobe had a lot of the clutch moments.
Yeah,
Game 4, game 6, game 2, a lot of Kobe.
So what if I was to tell you he had the lowest effective field goal percentage outside of Brian Shaw on his team? No,
that
seriously.
That just shows how important the shots are in the last 5 minutes.
True, know? Shooting, same thing, basically. I mean, some guy named Devin George who played a game 3 minutes had a worse shooting percentage.
The last 5 minutes, just not that they matter more, but, like, if you just dominate those times or even just the overtime, like – history will be written for you.
No, but, I mean, it is crazy. I mean, there is this weird thing where, like, the 08-09 series where he won, or not 09-10, he wasn't really that close. He wasn't that close to 2010 either. He got Artest's ass in that game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like,
Powell was nuts that whole series.
I mean, it's kind of why Kobe was never remembered as good as Jordan, because Jordan like actually came up in moments where like Kobe more like somehow history was on his side when things happened, right? He got lucky in a lot of big moments where he was good for one of the important games, but then he had other players who helped kind of save his ass.
Reggie was clutch against the Knicks, which propped up his clutch legacy a ton.
No,
but
I mean,
he was really clutch against that one team, to be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's the same thing as like, I guess maybe MJ should, maybe wasn't in that clutch either. Maybe it was, I mean, he has the big, obviously, game in 98 where he hits the shot over that's Jazz shot. But I mean, I think what makes Shaq as a better player is that he's just so dominant, right? I mean, that's how MJ was, right? Where he just like, the most effective play was to put the ball in the guy's hands and figure out how, you know, let him do whatever he fucking wanted to do, basically. So that's what this series reminded me of. Like, oh, right, Shaq. And Shaq had the potential. And the problem is with him, he was so big that I'm not sure he could, like, the thing about like guards and like even Jordan's still tall, but like these guards, there's like a different aura to them than like these centers that back to the basket who don't like have the ball hands all the time. But like Shaq had the potential from like 2000, 2006 to be the best player in like every year, win five MVPs and dominate everything if he really wanted to. I mean, he didn't want to, and there's nothing wrong with that, but he had that potential, was pretty obvious this season. And this is the best season, I think, if you look at it overall too.
Yeah. I'm going to translate to some role player thoughts, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dale Davis was a badass a lot of this series. Dude was never the strongest guy, never the tallest guy, never the most athletic guy. Dude fought like hell in the post for rebounds and dunks. He had some emphatic plays at the start of this game six. He had 20 points this game. It was his best game of the series. But he just is a scrapper, and he fought like hell. And he was impressive to me. You need a guy like that on your team. Rick Smith's inconsistencies were a killer in the series.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that translates to his regular seasons and things like that. But, you know, I think if he's better in game two, for example, they probably go to seven in this, just for example. And Austin Crozier, like a lot like Dale Davis, walked away really impressed with him. Like, I didn't know a ton about what he was, but that dude fights like hell too, and was, quite frankly, way more skilled than I expected before watching these games.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way Crozier played in this series, I mean, it kind of cemented him as a, like, just a good NBA player, right? I mean, I don't think he ever was never going to be, like, the 35 minutes a game kind of guy, but like he's a guy who you can play in the last 5 minutes of the game and he could score enough points to be on the court. Yeah. And especially when the game was slowed down the way this was, he could body up guys at least a little bit. Obviously he missed that shot in game six, which, you know, the kind of payback too, but you know, I remember watching him in the like mid 2000s, especially on the 2003-04 team where he was pretty good in the playoffs that year too with them. But I think this honestly might've been his peak too, if you look at it, kind of his overall career.
That's certainly possible. I did not know the whole time we did this that Dale Davis was an all-star in this season. It was his only all-star season. But, yeah, Dale Davis was really impressive to me. Just that dude was good. Like, he was just – he's kind of not, you know, like totally different skill sets, but just David West-esque of, like, completely, totally solid at everything he does on the basketball court.
Yeah.
And just very tough as nails in your face, good player.
What I think is kind of the craziest thing. So I didn't get into basketball until I was like 7 or 8 in 2003 or 2004. The difference of this team to that team in just 3 or 4 years is like, it's crazy that they rebuilt that quickly to be a team that was probably as good as this team, right? I mean, obviously they didn't make a finals, but they were, for a couple of years, that team was like a top 3 or 4 team in the league. And it's got, I mean, you say Larry Bird did it, whatever, but to see this, just to like, because I always knew, like, there was the, you know, Smith-Miller team, right, and that kind of – Mark Jackson kind of – but I always thought it was, like, the mid-90s was their peak. But really, this team, like, 2000 was kind of their last kind of push. And the fact that the team was able to, like, rebuild on the fly to a team that was probably as good as them within 3 years is kind of – it's kind of amazing if you think about it. Like, really, the only two players on this team that were on the team – I guess Jonathan Bender was too, but really the only two guys that were on this roster 4 years later were Miller and Crozier. Everybody else was – yep. Basically gone. I mean, it was
Kendall Harrington, right?
Is Harrington on this roster this year? I thought he came in the next year.
I thought this was his first year on the team.
No, I thought Harrington was like an 01 draft, but I could be wrong.
No, Al Harrington was definitely before that, 1998 draft. I don't remember that. Last year. Yes, Al Harrington was on the team for this.
Okay,
year.
But he wasn't
not playing the finals. Don't worry.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's what the crazy part is like this. I mean, like if you take out like if I was in the 2000 moment, I'd say, oh man, this was Reggie's last year, like last great year. Now we're going to see him at the tail end of his career, and he sort of was able to prolong his career another 3 or 4 years by just being that really good 3-point player. Obviously, he was like, if this Reggie had been able to play with the 2003-04 team, they probably would have won the championship. I mean, that's unfortunate. But, like, just to see the difference, right? Because, like, you would leave this final series thinking, oh, the next 3 years, the Pacers are going to be led by Miller, Rose, and Crozier. maybe, like as the sixth man. They'll figure out the other pieces around it, and they come out of this series and it's totally different, basically. Yep. Yeah, the team becomes Jermaine O'Neal and Artest, and Jamal Tinsley within two seasons, basically. It's kind of crazy. And Larry Bird is no longer the coach, and Rick Kyle, his assistant, is their coach all of a sudden.
It's fun retrospective to look and see, like, Reggie Miller making Jeremy Lamb money and Jalen Rose making Edmund Sumner money.
Yeah, but if you do inflation, they're making
money. Oh, I know. It's just funny.
I think Jalen signed a 7-year, $93 million contract after this series.
Yeah.
Something like that, which I'm sure he's making a lot of money on still because, you know, interest and stuff like that.
Yeah. Of the good, like, not good, that's the wrong word. Of the guys who actually, like, played a ton on this team, like, Derek McKee was the third highest played player. Chris Mullin was fifth. Best was seventh. Like, those guys didn't do a ton in the finals.
Yeah.
Smith and Reggie were one, too, but it was very interesting.
I think with the Lakers, too, I think this was kind of eye-opening just how good Shaq was.
Yeah.
I mean, I think also it shows this. Absolutely. Like, I think it shows why the league from, like, probably since Jordan retired until probably LeBron's 07 year was kind of a lagging league. I mean, obviously Kobe steps up eventually to become kind of the in-between LeBron's great run for 8 years and the end of, like, this era, I guess. But it's kind of weird to see that, like – I never could see why the appeal of the league was kind of bland, because I don't know watching Shaq was that fun. It's kind of like, to me, it's like watching James Harden right now. Same kind of like, you just know he's going to be efficient and like can make the shot, but like, am I really enjoying him slowing the game down, chucking up these like kind of awkward shots that just somehow go in kind of thing? It just, I don't know, it's weird to me.
Yeah, he's just too good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he was like the first guy over 7 foot that finally was coordinated, which is crazy.
Yeah, and he was nuts. And he was like fast. Like, you shouldn't be 300 pounds and be fast. It's just ridiculous how good
he is. Honestly, weirdly, and it reminds me of, like, Quinn Nelson, right? He's the Colts O-line guy who you just watch running downfield as, like, 350 pounds and blocking guys 15 yards off the line of scrimmage. Like, that's what Shaq basically was. He was an O-lineman, obviously too tall to be an O-lineman, and had, like, actually touch around the rim and couldn't, like, move. Like, was, like, in peak shape. I mean, it's kind of amazing to watch him move, but I definitely see the appeal of why it was kind of this downer league, because I think watching guards honestly is more fun. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about the new NBA era.
They have more room to be creative, which would I think,
right? And there's more like the way they like, just because they're facing the basket most of the time, so like the way they're trying to score is very, to me, unique play to play, right? Because it's step backs and, you know, floaters and kind of turnarounds, versus like when you're back to the basket, you really only have one way to score, and that's kind of turn off one of your shoulders and throw it up. I mean, right. you have the Hakeem or the Kareem kind of move, but nobody's developed that kind of move since them. So, I mean, it's really just like Shaq could just turn around and either I'm backed you up enough to be at the hoop to dunk, or I can kind of throw up something, get fouled, and make a couple free throws.
Yeah. So. I get that pre-Lakers Shaq was competing with, like, MJ and Hakeem for MVPs, but it's just wild that he only won one ever.
I had a stat up for a second. Let me pull him back up. I mean, so – right.
AI beat him, and cool. Tim Duncan beat him. Tim Duncan was better. KG beat him. Malone beat him.
There's that dumb year when Nash beat him when he was with the Heat. That's
one of the Heat year?
Yeah, at 04-05, Shaq was like amazing, and Steve Nash had a good year.
His MVPs. He was nuts.
Yeah, but Shaq was better that year.
Steve, yeah.
I'm trying to remember the year. Steve Nash.
The year that he won the title was 06. So yeah, you might be right. I don't know. Nash was just revolutionary, man. He was insane.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it was the kind of thing where, like, Shaq was so good that, like, kind of the LeBron thing right now, right? Like, LeBron probably should have won an MVP the last 5 years, to be honest. Like, one of them, at least. But he's so good that you don't realize it. I don't know. I'm kind of – let's see. What was the – was it the Russ Harden year? Didn't LeBron have a really good year, but kind of, like, muted in a way?
The year you could argue for LeBron was the Russ year, right?
It
was,
yeah, like that, or you,
Kawhi, Harden, LeBron.
You could argue the year he lost to KD in like 13, 14, he should have gotten it.
Maybe. Because it was KD, Steph, Russ, Harden.
Yeah, Steph deserved it both years. Steph was the best player in the league.
Steph deserved it both years. Harden finally deserved it when he got it. And yeah. Giannis, Atlanta. It's tough. It's just tough.
No, I mean, maybe not in the last couple of years, but like, I think there's a 5-year run there where he doesn't win the MVP of LeBron.
Yeah, only four times is crazy.
And he probably should have had it one of those years. I mean, Steph for probably an 170 game period for over two seasons in the playoffs was the best player in the league.
There are people who can, or who next year, 2021, will be able to legally drive a car and who were born, and every year of their life, LeBron James has been an all-star. Isn't that nuts?
That is nuts. So what are we doing next? We're doing a mailbag next week, and then we'll maybe do some
announcements. So that was – well, actually, let's last thing for me. That was fun. I learned quite a lot about that team, the best season in Pacers history, not the best team. Caitlin Cooper will explain it to you if you want to go read about that. But it was really fun to learn about that. I just didn't know enough about the 90s and 2000s teams, and I was kind of relying a lot on box scores and what people have told me. But now I can actually inject myself in these conversations with some nuance and answers. So – that was fun. I enjoyed it. Yes, going forward next week. Well, this week we're continuing as we have for all of April. Tour de Media later this week, and Adam on Friday with a What If. And then next week, yeah, in lieu of a finals game, we have to figure out what we're going to do for our next rewatch. Maybe with Last Dance we'll do some Jordan games. But in the meantime, we'll do a mailbag next week. So send us in some questions. Give us some stuff to talk about.
Yeah. No, anything you want to ask, anything.
Understood that there's no game. So, yeah, there's less of a barrier for, you know, important timing or anything like that. Just let it fly, man. Anything.
Anything. That's the end question. Anything else, Tony, before we head out?
That was fun. Like I said about the finals, that was fun. But, no, I got nothing else. Thank you guys so much for continuing to listen during these times.
Here we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great that we still have – some audience during this time. I know that it's different with no commute or no whatever your normal daily routine, but everyone who's listening, we really appreciate it.
Yes, we really appreciate it. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Follow Tony at TSNBA, me at FreedomAdam5. It's been all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we'll see you guys another this week.